29th, and today we get to do some fun stuff. We're going to hear Connect Oregon. And I think we're going to ask Senator George to come up.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2278. Sorry, I'm still learning here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, State Senator Gary George, District 12, and seated with me is Matt Simic. He is one of our volunteers on an effort, and that is a commuter rail extension from Milwaukee down to McMinnville and possibly out to the casino. As many of you know, we face a tremendous problem out there in our area, and that is the congestion at the Dundee area and the lack of a bypass. Now, what's happened is many of us have come to the conclusion that it won't be built, and now what we're saying, what are our alternatives? And one of them is the idea of using existing rail in order to make that connection to Portland. More and more people are settling into our area. It's becoming a bedroom community. And one of the things we would love to do is to maintain our agriculture and our beautiful wine country, at the same time be able to host folks who would love to live in that beautiful country. That will require some sort of alternative transportation. Now, there's more than a few people in this building have been shocked that I have come to this conclusion. But it's something called gas prices and diesel prices that all of a sudden have changed my mind to say, let's look at some new technology. Also, the system that's been purchased by TriMet, who will be operating that Beaverton to Wilsonville commuter rail, we began to realize that technology has really become our friend. And in the video that we have supplied to your committee, you're going to find Matt's presentation on our little project, and you're also going to find the actual train system built by Colorado Rail. And you're going to see a lot of things about how efficient that system is, meeting all the requirements of EPA, DEQ, and at the same time operating at substantially less fuel. We believe that potential today is real, that we literally could put in place what has been talked about for years. In 1998 and 1999, ODOT commissioned a rail study, and at that time they estimated $112 million to make this thing happen. We believe it can be done substantially less than that because we have been improving the track throughout the area, and that's one of the things I want to talk to you about Connect Oregon. Some of the money came from Connect Oregon, but the bulk of that money has come from other sources, some money we appropriated back when I was chairing Ways and Means Transportation. But beyond that, the system is now gradually moving forward, so freight traffic is a much improved rail system, but also now the potential, particularly with the growing population, of utilizing a tourism/commuter rail on heavy rail tracks, and making improvements on that becomes a reality. So one of the things I'd like to talk to you about, I was somewhat skeptical, to be very mild, put it mildly, about the last effort on Connect Oregon, only to find out that some really good projects did come out of that, but that we hadn't funded it adequately. And my personal opinion, and I'm going to leave that up to you, we'll probably see it in Transportation Ways and Means, it's not enough. So you'll probably hear that from others, but with that, I'm going to leave you and head back to my Committee on Health Policy, and Matt will take over for me, but I would be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question, if I may, Madam Chair. You picked up my interest. My ears were twitching when you said Milwaukee to Beaverton. That's very interesting. While I was the mayor of Milwaukee, we did have a trial run, and that was amazing because we went over the old railroad bridge from Lake Oswego to Milwaukee, and it took less than 5 minutes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you look at the rail maps, you're absolutely shocked. And if you remember back to when the Red Electric ran, it was a system that functioned for a good number of years. And on the in the presentation that Matt did that you will have on that DVD, you will get to see a lot of the history. What's happened is history is about to repeat itself. I really do believe technology really has, as I said, become our friend. The original plan in that study by ODOT was Milwaukee to McMinnville. Now, at that time, I made the following comment. Who in the hell wants to go from Milwaukee to McMinnville? Today, everybody does. And it is a connection, of course, to get us to that interim station, you know, which would connect the Wilsonville-Beaverton, the light rail, that you could literally go from the area of the casino into the air terminal using light rail once you made the connection in Beaverton. So these are all of a sudden the pieces are starting to fit together, and they have become very believable.
if I may, one more statement. That would include the light rail from Milwaukee on into Portland, so we would love to have your support there.
That would be the perfect connection. It's a much, much more direct route.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're supposed to talk.
Oh. But you said it all.
Oh, is it all? Watch the DVD. Thank you.
May I answer any more questions?
Wouldn't you want to just give us your name? And
sure. My name is Matt Simic. I live in Newburgh. I live outside of Newburgh. And for the past 6 months, I've been sort of assisting in trying to get all the horses going in the same direction. There's a great deal of enthusiasm throughout Yamhill County and, if I may say, in Washington County and Polk County as well, for looking at rail as an alternative to rapidly expanding roads. That roads are not going to be able to expand far enough without destroying the very county that we've come to love. So that's sort of the problem. It's not that rail is going to stop roads. It's not rail is not going to replace roads. But we're hoping that through our efforts that rail will be something that both freight and passenger can use at the same time while reducing the incredible pressure on growth of roads and growth of what roads do, which is to push residents and so forth outward rather than rail, which tends to collect toward the corridor. So there are so many questions to be answered, and these what we're doing now is trying to collect information through a feasibility study and business case that will tell us a lot of the answers so we can speak a little bit more authoritatively on what we can do to bring this first as perhaps a tourist train, sightseeing, weekend kind of thing, and then use that as a base to expand into more of a commuter rail and do so in league with our freight rail friends, and something that can suit everybody while helping to solve some of the tremendous transportation problems that are going to hit Yamhill County in 10, 15 years.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to, we have some invited people, and we have Matt Garrett and Chris Warner from the governor's office. Yes, go ahead.
Chair Byron, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Chris Warner. I'm the governor's transportation policy advisor. I'm just going to say just a couple of brief things, and Matt's going to do the presentation. But mostly, I just wanted to thank you on behalf of the governor for hearing this very important bill so early in the session. Certainly, I think I've talked to almost all of you individually about the importance of Connect Oregon and the transportation system. This is a great step forward for making sure our transportation system is not only diverse but also functional for all the very variety needs we have around the state. So, again, thank you. We look forward to working with you on this, and I'm going to turn it over to Matt, and he's going to do the bulk of the presentation. So thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Matthew Garrett. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Certainly a pleasure for me to be here to speak to Connect Oregon 2, Connect Oregon, but specifically House Bill 2278, which will provide $100 million in lottery-backed bonds for an additional multimodal transportation investment into projects throughout the state of Oregon. You know, past is prologue in this conversation. And as you know, the Connect Oregon was proposed in 2005 by Governor Kulongoski, passed by the Legislative Assembly, and then signed into law August 28, 2005. Connect Oregon required geographical representation of projects in that each of the five regions, very similar to the ODOT regions throughout the state, were to receive 15% of the funds, and the remaining 25% was to be awarded to projects with a statewide benefit without those geographic restrictions. The projects were judged on six considerations that aimed to stimulate Oregon's economy. Those considerations of reducing transportation costs for Oregon businesses, literally removing, if we could, barriers to the to enhance the efficient flow of commerce throughout the state as well as regions. Connecting various modes, trying to connect up two different modes was one of the considerations given in the bill. Creating jobs, again, the underpinning, remember this was a bill that was clothed in that economic stimulus job creation garment. Project readiness, we wanted to hit the ground running very quickly, so the import of projects being ready was mandated, as well as the financial match requirements. That was the underpinnings of the Connect Oregon conversation. The Oregon Department of Transportation received roughly 103, it did receive 103 applications, totaling $238 million. 99 of those applications met the eligibility requirements. We brought together the best and the brightest transportation minds to help vet and review these projects as it made its way through the process. We brought in the wisdom and the experience of the Area Commissions on Transportation to bring that regional and interregional lens to be applied on these types of projects. We also brought forth the disciplines within the various modes, the State Aviation Board, the Oregon Freight Advisory Committee. Rail and transit advisory committees were formed also to place the rigor and scrutiny on trying to make sure as we vetted these types of applications that the cream did indeed rise to the top. Now these groups all together, roughly nine of them, generated a list of recommended projects and then forwarded them on to a consensus committee. Now this consensus committee was a committee made up of 28 individuals drawn from the regional committees, those area commissions on transportation. A lot of the chair persons from the ACTS sat on this consensus committee. We also brought those similar type folks from the modal advisory committees, as well as some folks from business and industry, to take the next step in the scrutinies to be applied here. And over a two-day process, a very intense two-day process, the consensus committee unanimously approved a recommendation of 43 projects and forwarded that recommendation on to the Oregon Transportation Commission for their consideration. My Transportation Commission did indeed receive the recommendation and held a public hearing on that project list in June of 2006. In July of 2006, the Oregon Transportation Commission approved the 43 projects contained in that list. They approved the projects. They also approved a very disciplined compliance terms and conditions to attach themselves to each of these projects. It was important for the Commission to make sure that as these projects move forward, that there was the appropriate level of oversight to make sure these projects were indeed meeting the timelines and the milestones identified in the contracts or the intergovernmental agreements we had with these applicants. Again, compliance and scrutiny continue throughout the process here. In 2006 of August, $25 million of these bonds were sold. Again, I said this process was clothed in an economic garment. The process by design was aggressive. It was comprehensive, and it was transparent. I think we're here today to have this discussion because of the success connected with the Connect Oregon process. It was a good, solid process. It wasn't perfect, but it laid the foundation upon which we will build a Connect Oregon 2 conversation on. So there were indeed lessons learned, quick observations that we pulled from this effort. The consensus committee, its composition, added to the overall collective wisdom brought in the transportation conversation, in the vetting, and the overview and oversight of these type projects. So it was good to bring various lenses to lay across these projects. The Area Commission on Transportation's their involvement by their their chairpersons or representatives from the ACTS again just added to the maturity level of the Area Commissions as we moved beyond the highway portfolio where they played an extremely important role in the OTIA, the Oregon Transportation Investment Act process. We now have moved to a multimodal discussion for the Area Commissions on Transportation, so certainly a maturity of that very important forum. We also realized a benefit from dedicating staff to assist all the applicants throughout the process. That worked very well. Good feedback coming back from all involved there. Having the various modal and regional partners meet simultaneously caused some problems. There wasn't the opportunity for these two committees the ACT, the regional folks, and then these various modal disciplines to truly integrate and benefit from each other's expertise. We think that we must indeed integrate this relationship, somehow bring together the opportunity for them to have a dialogue which will better inform what would be a consensus committee, something that just generates observations they can learn from each other. We make some recommendations in my written testimony to see what comes first. Maybe you lay down some opportunities with the area commissions, laying out a project list, and then put the modal lens over it, or vice versa, whatever works. But somehow make sure these two groups are engaging in a concurrent fashion rather than in the sequential fashion where they were going off on their own. There were inconsistent ranking methodologies, and this became a challenge as we moved into the consensus committee. So I think the process could benefit from bringing some discipline that each and every recommendation coming from the various regions have that consistent methodology. This makes for a better outcome, we believe. The timelines, again, I said by design this was very aggressive. If indeed we had more time to vet and bring scrutiny and integrate our processes by the various advisory folks, that might yield a better outcome, one could argue. I would say that Connect Oregon has indeed done the spade work for expediting some of this to the extent that the administrative rule conversation has been taken care of. Doesn't need to be had during a Connect Oregon 2 chat. The database is kind of the information technology logistics that we had to start up are now in place. The intergovernmental agreement format, again, it's in place. And we have run the race once. Again, this was territory that we had not ventured into, so we understand the course just a little bit better than we did before. So the current status, where are we? A quick snapshot of the 43 projects identified. 36 have received their notice to proceed. So we are moving forward. Six are still in the signature process. Different conversations with various folks are playing themselves out, but all very positive and moving. That leaves one project. And one project has indeed been withdrawn by the applicant, and I would argue it was because of the compliance conversation, the information, the data, and the level of information just wasn't coming forth, and I think the applicant understood that, and she made the request to withdraw one of the Connect Oregon projects. So that totals up to the 43 projects in whole. Of the $100 million in funding, again, as I said earlier, $25 million of bonds have been sold, and we stand ready to issue the remaining $75 million scheduled for the February date. $100 million in investment also leveraged additional monies to the tune of $130 million. So for all intents and purposes, this Connect Oregon investment really yielded $230 million of investment for critical transportation projects throughout the state of Oregon. In addition, the data provided by the various applicants has projected the creation of roughly 2,500 construction jobs. And at full build-out, about 7,400 permanent jobs are created by this investment. So, again, meeting the mandate of stimulating the economy as well as creating and sustaining jobs. And the collateral benefit played itself out. 40% of the approved Connect Oregon projects are located at or near the certified sites that we have throughout the state of Oregon. Again, this is something that's key to attracting business to our great state. So now let us move from the past and look to the future. Connect Oregon 2. Governor Kulongoski has indeed proposed the second Connect Oregon package, which will provide the public and private facilities with $100 million in lottery-backed bonds for the multimodal transportation projects in the areas of rail, aviation, transit, and marine. Connect Oregon 2 will indeed build upon the success we have realized with Connect Oregon. The project applications demonstrated a very healthy appetite for this type investment. Remember, as I said earlier, $238 million of applications came in, and I would argue that that was a very conservative number. We had never run this race. We had never had this group of folks assembled to have this conversation. I would argue that the appetite probably will reflect something very similar to our TIA investments, where that appetite was four to five times as large compared to the money we had available. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think ODOT stands ready to build upon the success of Connect Oregon and to take on the administration of this additional investment. And we would encourage you and your colleagues to continue support this valuable and successful program. Madam Chair, with that, I am happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Representative. Come in.
Thank you, Matt and Chris. How are project benefits decided? How are they measured?
I think, Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, again, we have the foundation and the disciplines laid out in the legislative language. So, again, couched in terms of the efficiency of moving freight, commerce, connecting modes, generating jobs. Really, that was the underpinnings of how we took those projects and said, do you meet these mandates? If indeed you do, we see a benefit in terms of not only a transportation improvement, but also an economic benefit to that. So that was really the first layer.
Yes.
So how are you measuring that?
Well, we're kind of early in the process. Again, we've taken the information provided by the applicants, and we will hold them to that. Again, one of the disciplines that the commission placed as they gaveled down on the 43 projects was a milestone, a timeline, and a commitment. You said you would do this. You will honor that, or we will pull the funding. So as in terms of if should an applicant say we will generate this, this, and this, we have our local government unit overseeing, applying the scrutinies to make sure there is compliance with what the project said it would do. That is a process.
I'm sorry, Matt. I think I'm not asking this very well. How is it going to be determined on down the line if these projects are doing what they say they do, which is increasing the freight mobility, whatever the project said it was going to do? I can appreciate what you're saying. We've got jobs, and they're online for being built, et cetera. But how do we know that they're going to do what they say they do?
Well, again, it's the scrutiny given to it by this local government unit that is overseeing the implementation and the execution of the Connect Oregon applications. They will continue to monitor the process of the projects. I would also say I've got a lot of help in people telling me whether the investment yielded the dividend that it was said to do. The folks using the transportation system, business and industry, the trucking industry, will tell me if indeed the investment did yield the benefit. Have you removed that barrier? Have you made it less costly for business to be conducted?
That's is it going to be in something that is written form that we can see over time?
Sure. We'll put it down on the way we see this playing itself out.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. Really quick, colleagues, I need to remind you that I have a potential conflict of interest as my company works with multiple people on this list and folks who were not on this list. Just want to direct some comments to Chris. Chris, I hope you'll take back to the governor's office what a fabulous job the Oregon Department of Transportation did with implementing Connect Oregon. Kelly Taylor and Doug Tindall and all the other folks with the boss right there did a fabulous job. The application process was very, very smooth. The information dissemination process was first rate. Citizens throughout the state of Oregon could get online, and they could figure out exactly how to apply. They could figure out exactly how the process worked. They could figure out exactly where the application process was. And so in terms of public outreach, you told us you were going to reach out to folks, and you folks did it. And so, Chris, I hope you'll take that message back to the governor.
Absolutely.
Job well done. I also want to compliment the Department of Transportation on the types of projects they selected. While some of these we all may say, why is that on the list? I'd care to say, we took care of regional needs, and we stepped up as a legislature, each and every one of us who supported this last session, and we helped to move freight more efficiently and more safely and more effectively, and not only freight but people. And so great job. Look forward to working with you on Connect Oregon 2, and I'm very, very optimistic it'll be carried out in the same way that Connect Oregon will this time. It's a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a panel that we're going to invite up. Stefano Vigiano, Carrie Novak, and Kim Pusey. And go ahead.
Chair Byron, members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to testify on House Bill 2278. My name is Stefano Vigiano. I'm the Assistant General Manager with Lane Transit District in Eugene. Lane Transit District strongly supports this bill. First, I would like to thank the members of the committee who were on the committee last session for passage of the original Connect Oregon. Connect Oregon is providing critical funding for transportation projects around the state. And one of those projects that was funded was the Pioneer Parkway MX, which received a $5.4 million Connect Oregon grant. MX is short for Emerald Express, and it is the name of LTD's bus rapid transit system. Bus rapid transit is a fairly new concept in transit. It uses rubber-tired vehicles to emulate a light rail system. MX uses exclusive transit lanes, transit signal priority, level passenger boarding, and advanced hybrid electric vehicles to provide improved transit service to the community. The vehicles are not just hybrid electric, they also have a tram-like design, they have doors on both sides, and they have ramps that improve access for all passengers. LTD began operation of its first MX line 2 weeks ago. That line connects downtown Eugene and downtown Springfield, also serving the University of Oregon, with service every 10 minutes. Preliminary indications are that ridership has increased by more than 30% in these first 2 weeks. The Pioneer Parkway MX line that is being funded in part by Connect Oregon is an extension of the first MX line. It will extend from downtown Springfield up into the gateway area of North Eugene. It will serve a new regional hospital, retail and residential development, and a growing campus industrial area. New businesses, including the Peace Health Medical Center, Royal Caribbean, and Oregon Medical Laboratories, are counting on MX to help meet their employees' transportation needs. The Connect Oregon project will fund a new gateway station and other MX stations along the corridor. We're already spending the money. Design work has started, with construction planned for possibly starting in late 2007, but at least by 2008 and 2009. The new MX service is expected to start in late 2009 or early 2010. Connect Oregon was absolutely critical in the funding of this project. LTD will receive much of the project funding through discretionary federal grants. However, those grants have local matching requirements. Connect Oregon provided funding that will be used to match the federal funds. A $5.4 million Connect Oregon grant has enabled a $37 million project to move forward. So you can see that a small amount of local investment can yield very big returns. Although LTD fared well in the first round of Connect Oregon, transit as a whole only received about 12 to 13% of the funds available. We urge the committee to consider changing the criteria slightly to recognize transit's contribution to economic development. For example, transit's very effective in connecting people with jobs, which is critical to business, and this could be reflected in the criteria. The Oregon Transit Association has submitted proposed amendments to Legislative Council, and we urge you to consider those. Thank you once again for this opportunity to testify, and I have provided some additional material on MX for your review.
Thank you.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, it's nice to see some of you again. I'd like to welcome you back to Redmond whenever you get a chance, but we were the lucky recipients.
Would you like to give us your name? And
oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Carrie Novak, I'm the airport manager in Redmond. Redmond Airport was one of the lucky recipients of a Connect Oregon grant for $7.5 million for the last portion of a $52 million project for the terminal area. First portion of that was a $10 million project to expand our air carrier ramp, which was completed in 2003. And this was taking our ramp from about four places to now eight places that we can park aircraft. The FAA didn't believe that it would ever happen. We'd never have eight aircraft there. We now have six overnight, and that's just in a very short period of time. That was a $10 million project. The second one, I have a picture there of our parking lot that we completed just before Thanksgiving. $6.5 million project. Within the next 3 months, we'll be having to look for an additional place to build parking because it's not a build it and they will come. We need to build it. They're already here. We have added, and then the last part of that is our terminal project, which is about $35 million, which is what we requested the Connect Oregon grant money for. That's about 90% completed now in our plans, and some of them, you have some of the renderings there. And we should be started with that in about April, we believe, April or May. The project is funded partially with FAA funds, Connect Oregon funds. The airport is an enterprise fund of the city, so any other funds will be done with bonds that the airport will back with airport revenue and passenger facility charges. We were hurt this year. We were going to get some FAA discretionary funds, but earmarks, as you know, were not going to happen this year, so we have been hurt by that, and what that means is we just have to bond for more of the project, which we will. The airport is, as you know, the gateway for aviation in Central Oregon, which is a rapidly growing area. In 2005, we completed a master plan that included our aviation forecast demand for the terminal. That was before Delta announced service to Salt Lake City. That was before Horizon Air started service to L.A. There is another announcement coming shortly, and so we will have added three destinations in 3 years. And for an airport that's our size, that's dramatic. But at the end of 2006, we met our 2013 forecast. And so we had to go back at the end of 2006 to do another forecast. Our forecast for 2013 was 213,000. Last year, we ended the year at 215,000 plus. This year, we're supposed to go to 240,000 employments. And what you do is then you take that number and triple the number going through the building because people get off as well as get on, and then you kind of use that one-third as meter and greeters. We presented a terminal plan to the city council the Tuesday before 9/11 for take the building out to 76,000 square feet from the 23,000 square feet it is now. And I stopped the project after 9/11 because I felt like there were going to be huge changes coming along with TSA and other things, and I didn't want to have to retrofit the building. And in hindsight, I think it was a very good idea, but people seem to be having a hard time going with the stretch that we're going to go up to about 130,000 square feet, but we really have to do that, and all we did was save an interim step. So we're growing very, very rapidly. The building is a very important part. It's not the most important economic development tool in the region, but it's one of the most important. And we continue to add destinations, and it is very hard to keep up with the growth in the region. And as I said, this is not a build it and they will come. We need to build it. They're already here, and we're already just trying to keep up. I keep worrying that we're building the building too small, and the architects say, no, it's okay. But some of the things that we're doing in that building are really different. The building is going to be very energy efficient. Our building is very energy inefficient right now. It's over 13 years old. Besides solar and other things, everything we're doing, we're trying to follow the LEEDs, format for buildings, but we will not become LEED certified because, frankly, it's too expensive. And so we're not going in that direction. But we're very excited. It's going to be a beautiful building, but it's also going to be very functional because that's really important to us. I'd like to thank you and for the money that we're going to be getting from Connect Oregon. It's very important to us to make the project work, and we're certainly supportive of Connect Oregon, too. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee?
Would you like to hold till all three, or which way to shoot?
Well, we can wait, but I do have one quick one, and that was previous speaker mentioned, you know, a suggestion if we go, as we go ahead with this. Do you have anything in your mind that you think should be done differently, or?
I think all the money in the region should go to Redmond Airport. clearly, Chair Beyer, you know, I don't even know why they would enter into any other discussion. But other than that, I think it really went very, very well. We appreciate being part of it and being the recipient of one of those grants. It's going to really help us and help the whole region.
Thank you. I have met you before, so I should have realized I gave you quite an opening.
Okay, I follow, because that was going to be my question. Was there any negative consequence? Was there any sense that you were competing with other transportation needs in Central Oregon in a negative way throughout this process?
We were obviously competing, but not in a negative way. There is a real... people in the region understand the value of the airport to everyone in the region, whether you use the airport or not. It has a positive impact to everyone. We didn't realize when Delta started going to Salt Lake how many day trippers we were going to have to Salt Lake. Before, it took them 5 hours to go to Salt Lake. They would go, would take all that time to get there. They would work, have to stay overnight, come back late the next day. Now they catch the 6 a.m. flight, do business all day, have dinner in Salt Lake, catch the late flight back, and sleep in their own bed. And so those kind of things are the things we're hearing from people going to Los Angeles as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you for this opportunity. I'm Kim Pusey, General Manager of the Port of Umatilla. And I love transportation stuff. I want to say thanks to Matt and Chris and the rest of the folks in the Department of Transportation. And I'm going to tell you how much I love this. In 1819, that was when the first segment of the Erie Canal was completed. 363 miles, 83 locks, 600 feet in elevation from Albany, New York on the Hudson River to Buffalo on Lake Erie, which led to what some have estimated to be 85% of the industrial capacity of North America when we had our heyday there. Just stunning what happens in terms of economic development when you get the transportation infrastructure in place. My great-grandfather came from Europe in 1856, and they would have come through that area, went to Keokuk, Iowa, and when he arrived in the Great Basin, he described himself as shoeless, and that his pants were rags upon rags. And many of our ancestors came either on the Santa Fe, the Mormon, or the Oregon Trail to the western United States. A few years after he arrived, Transcontinental Railroad came. And through the 1870s and 80s, the arterial lines of that Transcontinental Railroad came into the Pacific Northwest. It was what some of the first cutting of the timber was about the railroad ties, the trestles, bridges, and so forth. Again, economic development coming into our region. In 1956, I remember as a little boy having a conversation at a family reunion. One of my uncles said, "We'll be able to go down home." That was to my grandma's house, in an hour. And everyone thought he was crazy because he was talking about the interstate highway system that was signed into law in 1956 by President Eisenhower. We saw all of the economic development come around the interstate highway system, some of us that have a little bit of gray hair. In any event, the Port of Umatilla is so fortunate because during that period of time in this region, they were also building the federal projects from 1934 to about 1975 so that we have a navigation corridor on the Columbia Snake River system. When you bring together the interstate highway system, the railroad system, and the navigation system we have with the federal projects on the Columbia Snake River system, that's what makes a perfect recipe for a place like the Port of Umatilla. We tried to wrap ourselves in the language of the bill as we made application for Connect Oregon, and were awarded $4.7 million of the $5.152 that we asked for. I've got a couple of articles here, one from the Oregon Business Journal and another from the East Oregonian just a couple of days ago about the progress that we're making for the improvements that we're using the funds for at our dock. We applied to put in an intermodal facility to be able to connect the highway, the road, and the road, the rail, and the river, and are doing so with a small distribution center. A company from Seattle is locating there. They've been in business since about 1920, the James Farrell Company. They export approximately 60 products from our region to Asia, Mexico, South America, some products going into Europe. And we're better able to move that product. What I've told my team is that in order to do this again, we have to demonstrate outcomes. Matt touched a little bit on the appetite. We could have applied for $15 million and used that to more fully flesh out what I see in the vision of an intermodal, full intermodal transshipment hub in Eastern Oregon. Because of wanting to have more people in our region also be recipients of this program, we ratcheted ourselves back to just a little bit over $5 million. Other people got awarded, and I hope that they're coming and telling you that they support this as well. We didn't want to just go in there and take the whole beefsteak, you know, and then, you know, have everybody else say, you know, they got all the money and we hate the program. So we tried to exercise that restraint, although we could have used more money. So we're very anxious to see a second round of this. The outcomes that we anticipate are that I currently am loading a barge a week, 84 capacity barge, and I'd like to see that come up to at least one a day. We have the infrastructure in place to do that by the time this is completed. All of you know that the Port of Portland took a couple of hits in recent years with cessation of service for a couple of their steamship carriers. We are absolutely inextricably, you know what I'm trying to say, connected to the Port of Portland. We are an antiport to the Port of Portland. I tell Bill Wyatt and the folks there in marketing and in the Marine Division that look upon all our property, all our infrastructure, as if it is the Port of Portland. Now, I look the other direction. I care about what goes on with labor, infrastructure, and the movement of goods there as well. I care about the channel deepening, because I can't do anything without the Port of Portland. They're, you know, direct partner there. If there's something that we can help them with in terms of economic development, we want to do that. If we can do that with trade, we want to do it. I visualize our port as being able to connect to the seaport at Portland, but also to reach down into southern Idaho. I see Boise as our reach. I do what I call a 10-hour turnaround. Truck driver comes from the Treasure Valley, drops in the port of Umatilla. I can have them in and out of that dock in 12 minutes and back on the highway going back to Boise so they can again spend sleep in their own bed that night. So I can't express how grateful I am for the funding. We want more funding. The Department of Transportation has been great to work with. I think it was a little bit slow because, you know, I'm a hurry-up guy, but I think that was because they had to go through the AG's office and get all the contracts, you know, and cross the T's and dot the I's and all that stuff. But, you know, great program, and I'm here for questions as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So are there any questions for Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. May I have a couple,
yes,
please? Ken, I just want to say that you talking about how many more barges you have now and you're anticipating, that's the kind of information I want to see from this. What kind of verifiable changes have been made because of the funding that's going? So thank you very much. And Mr. Vigiano,
yes.
The fact that you were talking on the first page of your documentation that ridership has increased by more than 30%, I like that kind of documentation. And I'd like to ask you if you would talk a little bit more about, on the second page, when you say that transit as a whole received only about 10% of the funds available and you want the committee to consider changing the criteria to connect people with jobs. So can you talk some about that?
Well, actually, I believe the Oregon Transit Association has submitted some specific wording on changes, and I have that. If you like, I can read that to you.
Sure.
There's six criteria. Three of them were suggesting some changes. One is whether a proposed transportation project reduces transportation costs for Oregon businesses, and we're suggesting adding or improves access between jobs and labor force, because that is what transit does. It allows people to get to their jobs, and that's an important issue for business, obviously. And that is specifically what Amex does. It's bringing people to their jobs in that employment area of the North Springfield. Another criterion is whether a proposed transportation project benefits or connects two or more modes of transportation, and we're suggesting the Oregon Transit Association is suggesting adding or facilitates economic development, which again is something transit can do. And a third item is whether a proposed transportation project is a critical link in a statewide or regional transportation system that, and we're suggesting adding the words, relative to the amount of multimodal transportation funds being replaced, will measurably improve utilization and efficiency of the system. So it's fairly minor changes in the wording, but we think that will help transit.
Follow up. You said that only 10% of the funds available were for transit, and you're suggesting to be more than 10%, I'm assuming.
Well, actually, I think the percentage may be closer to 12 or 13, I've learned. But transit was one of the four modes, and so I guess if it received its modal share, would have been closer to 25%. And I'm not saying that we necessarily assign sort of modal shares, but clearly it didn't do as well as some of the other modes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative
Madam Chair, just a comment about the 25%. I don't think we want to go down that road.
No, I agree.
I think that 1 year it may be rail that needs to be emphasized, and the next year it might be aviation. And I really don't want us ever to say you need 25% for each mode. You'll tie the hands of our economic development.
I agree.
Yes. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'd concur with Vice Chair Gilman in that, gosh, if we see an opportunity to put 80% of our money into public transit, because that's what makes the most sense for connecting Oregon, I would hope the Department of Transportation would do that. If at the same time we see a need to put the vast majority of dollars into the Port of Portland, I would hope that's what we would do. As a person who's pretty familiar with this legislation, I would be concerned that we start dictating percentages more than we already have, so that way we're meeting the greatest need based upon what the department is directing us or telling us the need is.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I had a question specifically, Madam Chair, if I may, to Mr. Vigiano. You've been in implementation on your facility for your lane transit, your EMX, now a couple of weeks. Is the worst horror story thus far the one I hear on Lars Larson, or is there something worse that's happened since then?
That's certainly the one that's drawn the most interest. And it was an unfortunate incident. I assume you're referring to the child left on the platform while the parent was still on the vehicle as it moved away from there.
Trying to get the child's baby stroller. Carrier
yeah.
off. And
I think we've learned something from that. Hopefully the riders have learned something from that as well. I think it's important to think of this not as a traditional conventional bus service. It's really more like a rail system, and that requires some adjustment by both LTD in the way we operate it and by our riders. And so it's fortunate that nothing it was an unfortunate incident, but fortunately no harm came out of it, and hopefully we'll both learn from that and move forward and not have it happen again. That is, I think, the biggest glitch we've had in our first 2 weeks, yes.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming and testifying today.
Thanks.
And I'm going to ask Commissioner Sam Adams to come up and join us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, go ahead.
Thanks. My name is Sam Adams. I'm the Transportation Commissioner for the City of Portland. An estimated number of 3 elected transportation commissioners in the entire nation. And it is a challenging job. It's I'm responsible for 3,949 miles of road, 157 bridges, and not a single one crosses the Willamette River, 1,000 streetlights, and about 54,000 streetlights and about 1,000 traffic signals. And I don't have the resources at the local level to do for what needs to be done for economic development and freight and marine and air that Connect Oregon does. And it's absolutely vital to not only Portland's success, but the region's and Oregon's success. And I want to thank you and your predecessors. I want to thank the governor and ODOT that have everyone who has helped make this process as meaningful as it has been for our region. A recent cost of congestion study done by the Portland Business Alliance and Metro, our regional government, showed that for every dollar invested in transportation, it results in a $2 economic benefit in the Portland area. It also pointed out that the Portland area is the third most trade-dependent region per capita of any region in the entire United States, with only Atlanta and I believe New York at a higher per capita rate than we are. Port of Portland, the city of Portland, the Portland region obviously serves more than our own needs as one of the hubs for trade and commerce in the state. And it is an earlier speaker talked about the interdependency upon the Port of Portland and ports throughout the region, and that is, it goes the other way as well. The Port of Umatilla and Morrow, for example, has projects that will provide for and increase the ability for marine and rail terminal consolidation capacity before shipment to Portland. And these eastern ports and ports throughout the state work very well together. We in the region that includes Portland have sought to put the Connect Oregon 1 money to good use. The decisions that we recommended included a new crane to be purchased for the Port of Portland that will accommodate much larger vessels that visit the port, and it is funding construction of 12,000 feet of new track in the Rivergate industrial area, which serves 65 businesses and accommodates primary container terminal at T6 and bulk grains for grains and minerals at T5. Connect Oregon also provided the last gap funding necessary for the extension of streetcar in the South Waterfront area, and this is vital not just to Portland's successful future, but we would say the region and the state, with 10,000 new jobs, 3,000 residents in downtown Portland, and OHSU, and assisting OHSU expansion, the state's largest employer. So I just wanted to spend a little bit of your time, and I do appreciate the opportunity to thank you for all the work that you've done on Connect Oregon 1. We've sought to invest it very wisely, and to encourage you in looking at Connect Oregon 2. It means more family wage jobs for Oregonians and Portlanders, and it means new opportunities for trade and commerce throughout the region and the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I have any questions? Representative Buckland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Adams, I think it's going to be hard to get anybody to say anything too negative about this bill today, and I'm not asking you to, I'm not fishing for it, but just out of curiosity, your experience with the process, did you find the decision-making process with Connect Oregon transparent and fair?
I did find it transparent and fair. I do agree with Representative Tomei, though, that, I wouldn't have known this before going through the process, but I think continuing to push on the outputs, the anticipated outputs, so that you have a maximum amount of accountability. We all are held to a maximum accountability 2 or 3 years after the project's in place to find out if the initial forecasted benefits of jobs or whatever it is that those are realized. I think that's important because it's going to take a couple of rounds, I think, to sort of get a feel for what works and what doesn't work. And I think that the proposals that came before my regional, our regional group, the more data that we had, the more trending that we had, the better economic work in terms of forecasting, those projects rose to the top. And I think continuing to push on that makes all the sense in the world to me as someone who has to make those same kinds of decisions on the local level.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, how about Brad Hicks and Martin Callery? Welcome, gentlemen. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brad Hicks, and I serve as President and CEO of the Chamber of Medford-Jackson County. And for the first time in our organization's 100-plus year history, we hold the honor of being the largest chamber of commerce in the state of Oregon with over 1,500 members, and those businesses represent somewhere between 40 and 50,000 employees in the Southern Oregon region. It's good to see my Southern Oregon friends over here. My purpose for being here today is as much to say thank you for the first generation of Connect Oregon, as others before me have done, as it is to ask for your support for Connect Oregon 2. I'm pleased to report that two of the, I would say, outstanding projects that were selected in Southern Oregon, the Central Oregon and Pacific Switchyard in Roseburg and the Rogue Valley Medford International Airport, were in Southern Oregon, and they were selected in what you know to be an extremely competitive process. I'm equally pleased to report that those two projects are very much underway and making great progress, but I think more importantly, their completion will contribute to the fulfillment of Connect Oregon's purpose of investing Oregon's air, rail, marine, and transit infrastructure to ensure Oregon's transportation system is strong, diverse, and efficient. I think all of America's transportation system was once the marvel of the modern world is being stretched beyond its capacity and falling into disrepair. In fact, a statistic that I picked up from the Americans for Transportation Mobility, which is a division of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, estimates that decaying surface transportation system costs our national economy roughly $63 billion annually. That's a lot in lost time and fuel cost. Congestion, as we just heard Sam Adams speak to, adds significant pollution to the air, and substandard roads claim thousands of lives every year. I don't think we want this story to be the Oregon story. Chambers across our state are just part of the coalition, and by coalition, I don't mean any formal coalition, but groups of business people and people from labor and government, both public and private folks, are seeking the Assembly's continuing commitment to multimodal and public transportation funding through Connect Oregon 2 in order to increase the investment in infrastructure to meet the needs of our growing economy. I'd like to add, hopefully I can make this seem relevant. Our chamber is also the visitor and convention bureau in our area, and that's the case in many chambers. Thank you. Well, our chamber is committed, obviously, to promoting and facilitating travel and tourism, and that's an industry that employs more than 12% of our nation's civilian labor and nearly 130,000 Oregonians directly or indirectly. Well, at our VCB, or some communities call them CVBs, at our VCB, we have a tourism initiative that includes education campaigns, advertising campaigns, a nationally televised sporting event, and the development of grassroots network to generate visitor interest in this state. And we do it because we think inviting visitors to Oregon and to Southern Oregon grows our economy but more visitors requires Oregon to grow its transportation infrastructure. So hopefully that ties in why good transportation infrastructure is important to cultivating a strong tourist economy. Also, as a member of the Jackson County Airport Advisory Commission, I'd like to add how important commercial aviation is to the Southern Oregon economy and, I guess, to the whole state's economy. We've been very active in the recruitment of new carriers, advocating for additional routes and the construction of our new terminal to Medford Airport. And our airport is breaking records every month. I think both freight, pounds of freight, and number of passengers coming through our airport. So I can relate to the Redmond story. Anyway, our chamber is very committed to supporting all those efforts to increase airport capacity and promoting policies that help airports and airlines compete. And the project that many of you supported as a result of the First Connect Oregon helps us do that. So, excuse me. In summary, I guess I would just say that Connect Oregon is making a very big difference in Southern Oregon, and I urge you to continue to support those efforts through Connect Oregon, too, and I'll answer questions as well.
Thank you. Do we have any questions?
Yes. Brad, you've heard the question asked several times already today. Any adjustments that you'd recommend to Connect Oregon to?
Well, while I wasn't on the panel of the selection panel, I know a number of folks that were, and by every estimation, that was an excellent process. So I don't know if I can answer that other than to say it sounds like it went very well from the legislative side and the implementation side. And then in our case in Southern Oregon, the projects are, I mean, the rubber has already hit the road. So I think it's going pretty well. I don't know that I could suggest any changes.
Thank you.
Thank you. You want to go ahead?
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer and members of the committee. My name is Martin Callery. I'm Director of Communications and Freight Mobility for the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay. And I also serve on the Oregon Freight Advisory Committee. On behalf of the Board of Commissioners and staff of the port, I want to thank you for your continuing leadership in focusing on multimodal needs of the state transportation system. And I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony today. During the past 15 years, there has been increasing awareness of at all levels of government, but especially in the state legislature, of the growing need for funding for non-highway freight transportation infrastructure throughout Oregon, both in our rural communities and in the metro areas. Progress has been made in addressing these needs during past legislative sessions. However, in order to maintain the integrity of the state system and increase its overall efficiency, there must be additional investment in all modes. Outstanding examples of good investments are the critically necessary Lower Columbia River Channel Deepening Study, Channel Deepening Project currently underway, the Port of Coos Bay's North Spit Rail Spur, and the many projects funded through Connect Oregon during the last legislative session. In fact, the success of Connect Oregon is directly attributable to the legislature's understanding of the need for non-highway transportation infrastructure. The Port of Coos Bay supports House Bill 2278 for Connect Oregon 2. Our experience with the first Connect Oregon funding program assured us that the process developed by the Oregon Department of Transportation and endorsed by the Oregon Transportation Commission, which was used to evaluate the broad range of projects forwarded for consideration, was successful in identifying the most beneficial and productive modal linkages and multimodal connector projects throughout the state. ODOT's Freight Mobility Section and ODOT Senior Management Staff did extraordinary work in coordinating input from Area Commissions on Transportation and ultimately the Super Acts, a variety of modal committees, rail, transit, and aviation, the Oregon Freight Advisory Committee, and the Connect Oregon Consensus Committee. The freight mobility section then followed up after the process by soliciting feedback from project proponents, ACT members, and many others on the viability of the evaluation process and the criteria, the project review steps, and how the overall evaluation process can be enhanced. One of the enhancement proposals is an amendment to House Bill 2278 to add a Marine Mode Projects Committee to the evaluation process. The Port of Coos Bay supports this proposed amendment primarily because ports are important components of the state transportation system, and efficient multimodal connections to our marine commerce ports are critical to the continuing viability of Oregon's trade-dependent economy. During the Connect Oregon evaluation process, I had the opportunity to participate at several different steps. The Port of Coos Bay was the project proponent on two projects: the rehabilitation of a barge slip to create a marine rail highway multimodal facility, and the ongoing rehabilitation of the Coos Bay Railroad Bridge to maintain rail linkage for Upper Coos Bay Marine Terminals to the National Rail System. These projects were presented to the Southwest Area Commission on Transportation and to the ODOT Region 3 Super Act. Both moved ahead based on their critical importance to the state transportation system and their emphasis on modal linkages and multimodal connections. The port also was a proponent on several other rail projects in ODOT Regions 2 and 3. For example, CORP has a variety of projects that can enhance the viability of the rail system serving Southwest Oregon. They didn't get everything they needed out of Connect Oregon 1, if you want to call it that, but hopefully when Connect Oregon 2 comes out, we can further enhance their system, which then benefits the entire region and ultimately the state. Additionally, I serve as chair of the Project Subcommittee for the Oregon Freight Advisory Committee. This subcommittee is comprised of representatives from all the modes and had the monumental task of evaluating the complete list of 103 Connect Oregon applications. I assure you that the subcommittee's analysis of all the projects was extremely thorough and was based heavily on the criteria set out in the Connect Oregon legislation. After many subcommittee meetings, we made a firm recommendation of a list of high-priority multimodal projects to the full Freight Advisory Committee. The majority of our high-priority projects were funded in the final project list approved by the Oregon Transportation Commission. I was also honored to be asked to serve on the Connect Oregon Consensus Committee, and I did declare any conflict of interest. I'll let you know that right now. Again, I can assure you that the deliberations of that dedicated work group focused on high-priority projects that provided modal linkages and multimodal connections that will benefit the transportation system and the Oregon economy. At times during the committee's deliberations, there was a spirited debate, but I believe that the final recommendation to the Transportation Commission from the Consensus Committee represented a fair and balanced evaluation of many diverse projects. In closing, I want to assure you that Oregon's freight community, in all its various configurations, needs to have additional long-term investment in multimodal transportation infrastructure in order to be successful in competing with other West Coast states and to strengthen the Oregon economy. I urge you to move forward with Connect Oregon 2. If the first Connect Oregon legislation is any indicator, there will be significant opportunities to leverage both federal funds and private sector investment through the Connect Oregon program, further enhancing our state transportation system. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Did I miss someone over here? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cowery, I'm interested in the portion of your testimony today that says that you evaluated a complete list of all of the transportation modes and those that had applied for the original application of funds, and that evaluation then gave you the distribution. Can you share with us what kind of follow-up has been done from the original distribution?
Well, the Freight Advisory Committee continues to track the Connect Oregon process. We realize that the OTC approved a list of 43 projects. We meet parts of the year on a quarterly basis, and during session we meet much more often than that. The freight mobility section is providing us updates. We had the opportunity, I think, in our committee, specifically the project subcommittee, to drill down to some of the things that Representative Tomei was asking about. For example, I'll talk a little bit about the barge slip in our area. Without that barge slip, we would have seen increased numbers of trucks on the highways bringing logs into Coos Bay. It was also a situation where, given the availability of that commodity for the state, we've seen barge loads of logs now coming to Coos Bay from places like northern Puget Sound and from BC. Without that facility, and hopefully it will be finished here shortly, the availability of that commodity for our regional mills, and I'm speaking of southwestern Oregon, not just the Coos Bay, Coos County, western Douglas County, Curry region, we wouldn't be able to get logs to many of these mills. So we had the opportunity in that committee to really grill some of the project proponents on what they wanted to see as far as benefit to the system from their project. I realize that in some cases it's a little harder to maybe compare apples and oranges in some cases, but we really were asking the questions about what's the benefit to the system. Are we going to see less trucks on the road, more trucks? Does this create jobs? Does it create other opportunity for goods movement? So those are the questions we had the opportunity to ask.
Follow up.
Yes.
You talk about benefit to the system,
mm-hmm.
and what you wanted to see or evaluate as their from their grant as a benefit from the system, and basically what we've been talking about is we've been talking about some sort of performance measurements. Has there been any follow up as to what kind of resolution? I mean, other than seeing the project up and running, and your testimony here today that there have been certainly a considerable amount of freight reduced from the over the road. Were there performance measurements that were measurable, ascertainable, that you can follow up on amongst the 43 projects?
There was a lot of discussion about how do you measure some of these projects, and frankly, I think that's an issue that's still in flux. Going back to some of the projects, I realize we're on the list. One project may sustain an existing linkage, so you're retaining the viability of a segment of the system. So it's difficult to compare that project to a project that maybe a new project, which is combining a series of modes and creating a better linkage, which then can say we will see X number of truckloads, or we will see more rail cars moving through this system, more tonnage or whatever else. I think the issue of measurement criteria is something that we still have to move forward on. I know the freight mobility section and others within ODOT are talking very heavily about that, and I think it's something that's a natural phenomenon that will follow on, hopefully, as this process moves forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the comment and the response. If you'll recall, I think it was within the first day or two, or the time that we'd first heard from Director Matt Garrett, that I'd asked for some kind of an evaluation of where we have come from and where we're at today, the amount of freight being transported by the various methods, the amount of passengers through the various transit systems. So I think that will give us a snapshot of where this is going, because if we can see that it's accomplishing the movement of commerce and freight and passengers much more efficiently throughout the state of Oregon, throughout the Northwest, has been indicated, which is very important here as a part of this, because as I see loads of logs coming on the end of the port of Coos Bay, not only does that take the pressure off of the precious resources that we have on our highways right now, it also provides jobs. And that's a wonderful opportunity. I'm not sure how they get the finished lumber out, but I'm anxious to know exactly that this is what we're doing, is that we're able to measure that both in terms of how much is being transported in and out, plus then the job created in that process. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Butler, we have ODOT working on a rail presentation for us. And I see Kelly Taylor in the audience, and I'm sure she listened to all your questions and will make sure that we have answers when they do come.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, there is an interesting irony in this legislation that I don't think we really thought of as we were passing that, and that was relating to transparency. When judging and rating multimodal projects, the people who are best suited to do that are the multimodal professionals who many had applications in the process. And when we were thinking about this legislation last session, it really didn't occur, I think, to any of us at that time. I know back in our region, on the ACTS, as they were considering these projects, half the members there had applications in the process. And then as you move to the advisory committees, many of the advisory committee members had applications in the process. When you got to the freight advisory committee, many of those folks had applications in the process. Can you share with us, and perhaps you're not the right person, but if you are, do you recall how we handled that issue? Was it just by declaring, or was there an opinion from the AG's office on how to handle this?
If I remember correctly, and I'm sure Matt or someone from ODOT can confirm this, there was an opinion from the AG's office directing everyone that was involved in an evaluation mode, whether it was through an act or through a modal committee or freight advisory or whatever, to declare your conflict of interest and really not participate in any discussion of that project. Now, I serve on the Southwest Area Commission on Transportation, but I recused myself from any role in it while I made the presentations to that group and then later to the Super Act for Region 3. Had no other than to stand up in front of the group and make the presentation and answer questions. I had no other role there. Same thing happened when I served both on the Oregon Freight Advisor Committee Project Subcommittee and at the Consensus Committee. All of us, and there were others around the room in both situations that were advocates for a project. And we just said, it's got to live and die on its own merits within this group. And that's exactly what happened. There were, you know, Central Oregon Pacific is a good example. They were requesting more money, but it wasn't all there because there was, you know, some questions about, well, can they get done what they need to get done? I think that it was a good example of a project that really makes a lot of sense, but, you know, they're going to have to do a better job. I don't know whether that a more thorough job, I'll say, in documenting the benefits and that type of thing. We went back several times in our own applications to talk about those things, you know, knowing that we had to compete with other very worthy projects statewide and within our region.
And colleagues, I'm not suggesting any modification. I just found it ironic that, again, that the people best suited to make the recommendations were the people who had the most to gain.
All right, thank you. Mr. Garrett, did you have any comment on that?
Not on that statement.
Yeah, on that.
Anything in transportation, I have a conflict of interest.
Chair Barr, thank you very much. Martin did a very good job of articulating the discipline and the declaration of early and often, if indeed there was a potential conflict. I would just capture it a little bit different. It wasn't a Department of Justice opinion, but it was direction. We identified it early on, again, as we tried to bring in the best and brightest minds to vet these projects. One would assume that some of these folks had projects. We knew that. So how did we get over there? We sought some direction from the Department of Justice, and it really came down to let the projects will stand on their merits, but declare early and often, and that probably became monotonous at times. But again, you had the best and brightest minds in transportation vetting this thing. So that Martin did a great job of articulating that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Butler.
Madam Chair, thank you. Just very quickly, Mr. Kelly, in your testimony, you say the freight mobility section followed up after the process by soliciting feedback. And I'm wondering if that feedback is in written form that the committee could receive for our consideration.
I think you would have to direct that question to the ODOT staff, but I believe that was the intent, was to appear before whatever appropriate group and talk about the feedback, because I know that Julie Rodwell from Freight Mobility Section came to several different meetings. In fact, the Freight Advisor Committee, she said, and we must have spent an hour and a half at one of our meetings saying, okay, tell us what you liked about the process, tell us what you'd like to see different. She did the same thing to the Oregon Ports Group, and I believe she did the same thing to the Oregon Rail Users League, and I'm active in all three.
Manager, can I request from Mr. Garrett a response? Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, duly noted, if indeed that information is out there, we will bring it back and we will share the feedback from the Oregon Freight Advisory Committee and some of the other forums that we engage.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing no other questions, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And Roger Martin.
Madam Chair, I forgot to give an accolade to Julie Rodwell. I have to tell you, Julie Rodwell was very, very instrumental and very, very helpful in the process.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and although I have three clients interested in three parts of this, I'm here today as the Executive Director of the Oregon Transit Association. Unfortunately, the Vice Chair from Southeast Portland, Milwaukee, anticipated quickly it got us ahead of ourselves. I was the one that was going to talk about this amendment. But first, just let me say, this is obviously one of the most successful programs you will ever deal with as legislators, and witness all the testimony you've had. And having been in this building probably longer than anybody else, I sat at the committee table there 40 years ago in the 1967 session dealing with transportation issues. This is one of those unique programs that wouldn't have happened without the right governor, the right director and personnel at ODOT, and the right legislators in both parties supporting it. And it's one of those very successful programs that I hope we will expand upon and continue. And everything came together in the 2005 session, and you all be very proud. When you look back on your careers, this will be one of the issues you'll remember as a high point in your career. Transit has no desire to get into the argument that Vice Chair Gilman mentioned about we would like more, obviously. Everyone here would like more. We would only like you to consider the first of those three amendments. Stefano didn't know exactly what was going to be suggested. We are only interested in the amendment that says adds to sub A of 3 or improves access between jobs and labor force. From our side, of those of us in the various modes that are promoting this legislation, we work very closely together to make sure we don't upset the apple cart in any way. And we have talked to our partners in the other modes. They have no problem with this. During the various deliberations, especially at the ACT level, a number of people said, well, what does transit have to do with economic development? The other three modes, you can make a very obvious case for. The intention, I think, of the governor and the Department of Transportation was that this is the way we're going to help four modes of transportation that are not highway related. And transit is, I think, a vital role there. When I first took over as the executive director, there were five transit systems, of all of but one were right on the I-5 corridor. There were none anywhere else. In today's world, we have four very active systems along the Oregon coast. We have systems in eastern Oregon. Bend is a brand new system that just come online last fall and are already breaking records for people that are transporting. And in answer to Representative Butler, I think maybe giving you figures is a bit premature, at least in the transit area, because Stefano described how successful the first part of the system is in Eugene, but the funding they got from Connect Oregon is going for that second section that won't come online for a period of time. But I appreciate exactly what you're asking for, and all of us want to give you the success stories because we think it's very almost self-evident, and we want you to be very enthusiastic about moving this on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Art Schlack. Welcome.
Good. Welcome. Thank you. Good afternoon. Chair Beyer and members of the committee, Art Schlack with the Association of Oregon Counties. As you probably will recall, the Association of Oregon Counties supported Connect Oregon One, and I'm pleased to be here today to also support the passage of House Bill 2276 or 78, which is referred to as Connect Oregon Two. I do that with and recognize that we support the same regional distribution of funds that was found in Connect Oregon One. And it's also embodied currently in Connect Oregon 2, and that is a minimum of $15 million to each of the five regions that are identified within the legislation. It is extremely important and crucial that all regions of the state benefit from the multimodal funds that are provided by this legislation. We find that as to being the core, one of the core pieces of this legislation, that all areas of the county or the state benefit. Connect Oregon One projects assisted county transit, aviation, and rail facilities, and we would note that freight movement was enhanced and economic development was furthered within the state as a whole. Connect Oregon 2 is extremely valuable, and we laud what it's accomplishing. But I don't think we can lose sight of the fact that this Connect Oregon 2 does not address the interconnected system of state highways, county roads, and city streets. It's something that needs your attention, needs this legislature to look at. And I know you've heard already from us with regard to our need study. You've heard with respect to the loss of county funds with secure rural schools, the fact that we haven't raised the gas tax since 1993. I mean, these are all things, and I just remind you of those as we look at helping on a multimodal basis with Connect Oregon 2, the fact that the road system, which is the largest asset the state has, a physical asset that the state has at this point, need your attention also. Further, I would suggest to you that the county's fiscal constraints due to the loss of PL 106-393 should be taken into consideration in the development of the criteria for identifying and selecting projects at this point. And you'll recall that the legislation in Connect Oregon 1 had a 20% match, and that's what I'm referring here. If there was some way of at least recognizing the fiscal constraints that local governments have due to the unique circumstances that has presented itself since 2005, at least in terms of the criteria, so projects that might be submitted would be eliminated for it not be for the fact that you didn't have the 20% match at home for that particular project. Chair Byron, members of the commission, I had the pleasure of watching and observing Connect Oregon One, the process, the work of the acts as they went through, and I also had the pleasure of sitting through 2 days of the consensus group as the ACT representatives worked with other individuals to come up with the recommendation that was forwarded to the Oregon Transportation Commission. Along the way, there were bumps and bruises, but this was a process that worked. And I would just submit to you that the input of the ACTs, knowing the regions, knowing the interrelationship of how those regions work together, and the consensus group that was formed by the OTC really was the basis for the selection of projects that were done in an expeditious manner. And I would only hope that the process in Connect Oregon 2 maintains those essentials and those components in terms of the process. With that, Madam Chairman, if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up, we have Bruce Cogswell. Cardwell. And my apologies there.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee.
Welcome.
My name is Bruce Carswell. I'm president of the Portland and Western Railroad and also vice president of the Oregon Short Line Railroad Association. I'm here to lend both my company's support as well as the support of our association to House Bill 2278. Give you a bit of background. Portland and Western Railroad is a 520-mile regional system serving essentially the territory between Astoria and Eugene. We transport paper, forest products, grain, aggregates, and consumer goods and consider ourselves one of Oregon's key short-line railroads. I currently serve on the Rail Advisory Committee for ODOT. Our committee consists of a cross-section of Oregon's entire rail community, including Class 1 railroads, short-line railroads, labor, local government, businesses that use rail, Amtrak, and the Port of Portland. This committee was charged with reviewing all of the projects under Connect Oregon 1 that had a rail transportation element. And during that review, we quickly realized how challenging it was going to be to find projects that were worthy of the $100 million, given that there was $238 million worth of projects submitted. And the comments that were made earlier, I suspect this go-around, if the bill is passed successfully, we'll see an even greater outgrowth of projects submitted. We worked closely together and ultimately forwarded recommendations that were developed through a consensus process. And that the consensus process started at the modal committees and then worked all the way up through the consensus committee as well. Many deserving projects were left unfunded simply because there wasn't enough money to go around. The Portland and Western submitted three projects that were ultimately on the final consensus recommendation, although one was not fully funded. Two of these projects will replace the rails on two key branch lines in the Willamette Valley. The replacement of this rail will allow the customers, the very important customers, the large lumber mills that are located on these lines, to access the current standard rail car of today that has a gross vehicle weight of 286,000 pounds, which they cannot now currently access. Without this access, those customers and the jobs that they supply to the community would find it hard to compete in today's environment. And so those projects were very important to not only us, but the customers that we serve. And the third project will construct a rail switching yard in Washington County, which we characterize as a system capacity enhancement. We can consolidate our activity, reduce congestion, and reduce potential freight impacts in the new Wilsonville to Beaverton commuter rail corridor. Today, Connect Oregon 2, as it's being called, sits before you with a request for $100 million, and we support that wholeheartedly. To give you a brief example of the type of project that my company would likely look to submit, on our line to Astoria, the rails beyond Scappoose are inadequate for the 286,000-pound rail cars that I described earlier. The need to rebuild this section of track has become particularly important with the construction starting on the Cascade Grain Ethanol Plant at Port Westward outside of Clatskanie. This plant is scheduled to be in operation in about a year, and will bring an additional 10,000 carloads of inbound corn to supply the plant, and likely will have an additional 4,000 carloads a year of traffic going to both the Portland area and elsewhere in the country. Without some substantial upgrades, that rail line is going to be hard-pressed to supply the transportation needs for that plant and other plants that are looking to co-locate in that industrial development area along the Columbia River. This is just one of the stories, I think, that are out there. I know of several others from my partner, Short Line Railroads, around the state, and we really look forward to successful passage of Connect Oregon 2. Thank you for your time. Questions?
Thank you. Question?
Representative, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carswell, and I'm not sure that you're the appropriate person to ask this of, but no one yet has mentioned Amtrak, and I noticed since you're on the Rail Advisory Committee, were there any funds that we gave this last time for Amtrak to improve the rails for Amtrak? I understand that one of the problems that Amtrak is late very often because it's difficult for them to pull off while freight goes by or vice versa. So can you talk a little bit about that, or is that something I should ask somebody else?
Certainly, Chair Beyer, Representative Tomei. There was a couple of projects on the consideration list that would have benefited Amtrak. One of the key projects, and made it down to the last minutes of the consensus committee discussion, was construction of what so-called pocket track in Eugene for the train to essentially pull off the main line while it sits at the station, and also building some additional tracks through the Eugene yard to allow trains to pass. That was a project that we at the Rail Advisory Committee supported fully. As we went through the consensus committee process, it really did come down to making some very hard choices about where was the best benefit, and ultimately the local regional people there helped form the decision that when you had to make those tough choices, ultimately that project didn't make the grade. But in our view, that would have been right below the cutoff line, and it'll be a very good project that will likely rank very high in the next go-round.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. Seeing no other questions.
All
thank
right.
you.
Thank you.
Ann Hannes.
Chair Beyer, members of the Transportation Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Ann Hannes. I'm with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. I think the future prosperity of our economy is directly linked to how good of a transportation system we have to transport our products and people, regardless if it be by water, air, highway, or rail, or a combination of all of these modes. You've heard a lot about the emergence of the global economy, but that has translated directly into a very significant increase in freight, not only domestically but internationally. In fact, the projections are showing now that with the moderate growth of the economy, freight tonnage domestically will increase by 60% by 2020, and import-export tonnage will rise by nearly 100%. That is a very important factor when it comes to the competitive edge of our state and how we position ourselves nationally and globally. In fact, regarding that, from a geographic standpoint, Oregon is positioned very well to be able to capture this increase in freight that we're going to be seeing. I've read recently that that Long Beach, for example, in California, is experiencing a lot of congestion. A huge amount of the nation's trade comes through those ports in Southern California. If we could capture even a portion of that coming up to Oregon in the Northwest, it would have major ramifications for our economy. More and more, we're seeing that a deal to attract or retain a business to Oregon is directly linked to transportation access and availability. The governor recently announced Genentech, a major biotech company, a facility that will be in Hillsboro and that will attract 250 jobs to Oregon, and that's a very important part of a biosciences business cluster. We've also seen other improvements to transportation be critical to attracting projects, for example, in Molalla, Albany, Lebanon, and elsewhere around the state. Along with the changes in the economy and the move towards a global economy, we're seeing changes in business practices and technology to just-in-time inventory. And so congestion problems and issues, even where you have an hour's delay, can have a major impact on a business because they may have their business production lines hinge on the ability to move that freight into that plant and to move it out as well. Communities that don't have a viable transportation mode confront major hurdles these days in trying to get their products to market. We are seeing that we've got choke points such as rail and highway bridges that can't accommodate freight traffic. You've heard about the need to handle 286,000-pound weight load cars. If we have outdated equipment or we can't have a rail line or a truck cross a bridge, that has severe implications for our economy. You also heard from Director Matt Garrett that the first round of Connect Oregon has had a very direct and very beneficial impact to nearly half of our certified industrial sites, and all of those sites will benefit in one way or another indirectly as a result of the system-wide improvements. I think it's also important to recognize that while we're contemplating another round of Connect Oregon, the other states and other countries are not standing still because they recognize the strategic importance of intermodal transportation networks. For example, Washington State has recently approved $637 million for multimodal, while California will spend $3 billion on multimodal and freight mobility infrastructure. In summary, investment in our multimodal transportation system is absolutely essential if we aim to remain competitive and if we can retain and attract business to our state. I believe that we can benefit greatly from continued and immense growth in the freight movement as a result of the global economic trends if we invest strategically with this next round of Connect Oregon. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? No?
Can I
just? Oh, okay.
Well, I just want to follow up on your statement. It's important to invest strategically, and I think that's some of what we're trying to get at today. We want to make sure that these are investments that do produce what it is that they hope that they do. So thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Hey, Anne, I'm having a little bit of trouble reconciling some of the comments because while I know the Department of Economic and Community Development is very sincere in this testimony, I'm struggling with why they're in the process of dismantling the Ports Division, which serves as the hub for all this intermodal connectivity. To me, it seems like the Department of Transportation and the Department of Economic and Community Development ought to be like this in working through these issues rather than the Department of Economic and Community Development saying ports aren't an important part of us anymore.
Chair Beyer, Representative Smith, we don't currently have a ports division within the Department of Economic and Community Development. We have two individuals that have been hired recently for the first time to work directly with ports, Dave Harlan and Guy Alvis, and they have been working closely with ports because the Department of Economic Development recognizes the ports as really the gateways coming into the state that are going to be the way in which our either products either come or leave. So I think the agency recognizes very strongly the importance of ports.
I can just follow up. I'm glad to hear that because it was this body in done in ways and means that made sure the department put the ports folks in there. Mm-hmm. What I would remind the department is that statutorily there is a ports division. And in legislation that's coming forward this session, there would be an elimination of that division. And so while I know the department in words expresses their sincere desire to work with ports, I'm not sure that the actions support that. And so I hope the message would come through that this body is sincere about helping intermodal connectivity. They support a Connect Oregon 1. They're supporting Connect mm-hmm. Oregon 2. But we need to rely on our ports who serve as that hub to make sure this gets carried out. And so I hope the department would recognize that. Thank you.
Thank you. No other questions? Thank you. Fred Nussbaum?
Can I tax him?
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, my name is Fred Nussbaum. I'm strategic planner for AORTA, the Association of Oregon Transit Advocates. And we are here to support House Bill 2278, Connect Oregon 2, even though our primary constituents, which are rail passengers, got very little out of Connect Oregon 1. And I'll return to that topic in a moment. We are not only concerned about rail passengers, we're also concerned about transit riders, public transportation, users of all kinds, and rail service altogether, because passenger rail and freight rail have to work together in order for passenger rail to be operating in our situation here in this state, at least. I don't see the state getting to the point where we're buying right away just for passenger rail. It'd be great if we could do that, but we can't. Yes, we only received, our passenger rail only received 0.2% of the total rail allocations under Connect Oregon 1. We got less than 1.1% of the total allocations. So we came out of this process a little less happy than maybe some other folks. Our brethren in the rail industry did quite well in terms of freight rail, and we're happy for them. A lot of those, all those projects were important for bringing our freight system up to date and helping the economy that way. So we do have some suggested changes to the process and even the language in Connect Oregon 2. In terms of part of the reason why passenger rail seems to have fared worse than the other modes is that most of the projects, passenger rail projects, the priority projects, are of statewide significance, did not answer to the local interests. And we think that part of the process, especially in the consensus committee, got down to sort of parochial interests. That's not to say that those other projects that did get funded were not important. We wish the Eugene area well with their expansion of their bus rapid transit system and look forward to seeing that in operation. But there was a bit of competition there for those $5 million, and the passenger rail didn't get it. And we're concerned that passenger rail will never get it because of the way things are set up. So we would like, first of all, a minimum guarantee for projects of statewide significance in the formula in Section 2 of House Bill 2278. And we have submitted for your consideration an amendment to that effect. The funding under Connect Oregon 2 is not only important to fund the other modes besides the highway system, that's part of the reason, but also those projects that have benefit for larger than just the regions. We have a little bit of concern about the regional allocation based on the highway regions because that has very little to do with the other modes. For instance, the ports are concentrated along the Columbia River. In that area, you don't have ports in southeastern Oregon, You've got other things there. The rail system has its concentrations in various areas based on the fact that that is a part of the national system for the most part, certainly for the Class I railroads. Having said that, we also recognize that there is no geographic system that's going to be absolutely correct for multiple modes. Each mode has its own distribution, its own distribution of infrastructure and distribution of needs. So maybe we should just stick with that, but perhaps the amount of focus on the regional distribution needs to change a little bit. We had understood that other folks might come in with a proposal to reduce the minimum allocation from 15% to 10%. If somebody does that, we would support that. We're not the ones that are going to push that. We'll stick with the statewide benefit allocation. The other problem for us, for the rail passenger side, is that the entity that should be taking the lead on rail passenger projects should be the rail division. But the rail division has taken itself out of the equation because the rail division is one of the primary evaluators of the projects. At least that's the way ODOT has interpreted the role of the rail division. For instance, the Eugene project, the passing track and layover track, that would help Union Pacific, whose railroad that's on, but it's of much more importance to the passenger rail operation than it might be to Union Pacific. Yet Union Pacific is the only one, except for Amtrak, that can make application under Connect Oregon 1 or 2 or whatever, at least the way the law is written right now. State of Oregon needs to start thinking about buying rail equipment because we're about to lose one of the Talgo sets that operates in the state of Oregon as soon as Washington implements its sixth round trip between Portland and Seattle. We don't own the Talgo trains. Washington lets us use them. Washington and Amtrak own those sets, but Oregon doesn't. So if they want to reallocate that equipment somewhere else, and as you heard, Washington is now putting in hundreds of millions of dollars into their rail infrastructure. That's going to happen sometime within the next 2 to 3 years. And we need to be thinking about ordering equipment for Oregon now because it takes 2 years for us to get new equipment. There's no way under Connect Oregon for such an application to happen. Union Pacific isn't interested in passenger rail equipment. Amtrak maybe, but Amtrak has a whole different set of priorities. Maybe they'll get more funding in Congress this time around, and maybe they'll be into an expansionist mode, but the last decade or so, Amtrak has just been fighting for its life, so it hasn't been out there fighting for new equipment and new service. So I don't know if we can fix that within Connect Oregon. Perhaps we need a different funding package to deal with those issues, but that's our perspective on the situation. Nevertheless, we think that this bill, this program is very important, especially with regard to public transit and the freight railroads. So thank you very much. I'll be glad to answer questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nespel, just to clarify on your proposed amendment, you are proposing that the 15% still remain in each section as long as 33% of the overall somehow overlaps to make sure that 33% of the money goes to statewide projects. So I have
that's correct. Because a project, for instance, like the Eugene Rail Project, would still fall within that region,
right.
Could be considered part of that region's allocation, and could also satisfy the statewide benefit requirements if that was determined by the Transportation Commission to be a statewide project. So, yes, there could be an overlap.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, at some point I'd love to, not now, I'm sure, but to hear from ODOT Rail Division. I'd like to get some information from them on how they see this.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. And last but not least on my list, we have Steve Clark. And thank you, committee, for bearing with me, and we'll get this finished up.
Well, if Representative Reed would just kind of hold it down, we could move things along.
Thank you, Chair, and House members for this opportunity to provide testimony in support of Connect Oregon 2, and thank you for your perseverance this afternoon and your courtesy to each of the folks who appeared before me. My name is Steve Clark, and my day job, I'm president of the Portland Tribune and the community newspaper groups around the Portland area. And my other day job, I'm active, as you are, in civic involvement, served on the Region 1 Evaluation Committee of Connect Oregon 1, on the Big Look statewide task force, and working as one of the chairs of the Oregon Business Plan Initiative on Transportation, and active in the Portland Business Alliance. Last session, the Portland Business Alliance supported the passage of Connect Oregon. This, as you know, was the first piece of legislation of its kind. $100 million of investment in marine, rail, air, and transit across the state did result in critical improvements to both to our multimodal system. As others have, I thank you. I thank the governor for your support and leadership in this matter. Investments such as those provided through Connect Oregon are critical, as you've heard, to the competitiveness of Oregon's business and the economic vitality of our entire state. As you may know, and I think you've heard from Portland Commissioner Sam Adams, in December 2005, the Portland Business Alliance, in partnership with the Port of Portland, ODOT, Metro, and almost two dozen business sponsors, completed a study entitled The Cost of Congestion of the Economy of the Portland Region. Many of you were courteous to us last summer to during the interim to hear about this study. We commissioned the study to provide for a better understanding of the relationship between transportation and the economy. The study certainly reinforced some aspects of what we already knew, but it also quantified, as you are seeking today, to define information in very clear terms about the impact, not only investing strategically in transportation, but to discern the outcomes from those investments. Briefly, and I know your time is short, here's what we learned. You've heard today that Oregon is a highly trade-dependent state. I'm not going to go into the details of that. You know them very well from your position within the legislature and on this committee. But that's a unique asset that we must continue to invest in. It is an asset, and it is an investment in a competitiveness that isn't just Oregon-wide, it isn't just Northwest-wide, it isn't just nationwide, it's worldwide, and we must continue to invest in that. And Connect Oregon is one aspect of that. And in the sake of brevity, I'll skip over some aspects of my testimony. As part of the regional cost of congestion study, we interviewed many businesses in the Portland metro area. What we found is that businesses are already making changes in their operations to address the growing congestion that is experienced in Portland. These changes often increase costs and diminish a business's competitiveness. For example, Intel, which is based in Hillsboro, has had to move up its delivery time to the Portland airport four times, a total of 2 hours, over the last several years because of increasing peak period congestion within the Portland area. That isn't just a Intel to Hillsboro, Intel to the port issue, but it affects production lines in places as far away as Israel, Ireland, the Far East, and a little closer at home, Texas and Arizona. We found, as you heard today, that many businesses are affecting and increasing their inventory for just-in-time commodity availability. I would encourage you to not require more and more businesses to increase their inventory for just-in-case matters of delivery, just in case I'm not able to make that delivery because of congestion. We learned that Schnitzer Steel Industries, which has a facility in North Portland that provides for recycling of metals and then delivers those product, that metal, to Cascade Steel Rolling Mill in McMinnville, has been affected by congestion. Congestion for this firm means that 50 trucks are on the road each day carrying materials between North Portland and McMinnville because they're not able to accommodate the flow of that material by rail. They do not make one trip per day, each of those 50 trucks. They attempt to make three, but as a result of congestion, those trucks are only making two now, which the impact is more trucks on the road. If we could do something about rail connectivity, we may be able to reduce some of the truck shipment between that area. You heard today from Portland Western and Railroad about the impact of Connect Oregon on them. It was very important in many communities. I live in Tigard, where the lines themselves are the switching yards because of the capacity of the system at present, blocking not one but two and sometimes three road interchanges as rail cars are switched. Connect Oregon helped to deal with that matter to some degree, and there's other areas what needs to further help. Each of these examples, as well as others that we have heard, illustrate how failing to invest strategically and measurably in adequate infrastructure can make Oregon less competitive, both locally and in the global marketplace. Congestion and impacts of rail or air or marine also have impacts on our citizens. What the cost of congestion study showed was that if we do not deal with the Portland region's congestion, that economy in the Portland area will increase in a loss value to reach an $844 million loss per year by the year 2025, and a total loss of 6,500 jobs. The reverse could be true, however. This study showed that we can actually create that kind of economic return. For us, this study was a call to action. As you may know, we are taking the cost of congestion study statewide. The results of that will be completed by the end of this week. We will like to return to you and share the results of that study with you. We know that Oregon is not a Portland area economy alone. We know it is a state economy, and that the Portland area and the rest of the state economies and communities do work together. They are connected through the transportation system of our state. We are all about changing the way we talk about investments in transportation. My family would tell me that I'm a little goofy. They would even testify before you and say that. For the last 25 years, I've made the mistake of talking about transportation no longer. We must talk about our economy, our communities, and our citizens when we talk about transportation and the outcomes that you seek to invest in. We very much support the passage of Connect Oregon 2. It is, as you heard today, a very important investment in our state transportation system and our economy. But as you've also heard, and I'd like to echo with others, Connect Oregon 2 is not enough. We must go further. We must begin to catch up with other states who are making significant and very large investments in their transportation investments for their state's effectiveness and economy and their communities. We do support Connect Oregon 2, but would like to remind you, as some of you have already know, that as part of the Oregon Business Plan, we have committed to return to the Oregon Legislature in the first week of February with a strategic investment strategy in Oregon's transportation system. We are prepared to work with you, this committee, the entire legislature, the governor's office, and the Oregon Department of Transportation and the commission to further this effort in this session and to carry that forward in the 09 session. As I said, we support Connect Oregon 2, and we will make good on this pledge that was offered in the Oregon Leadership Summit on January 4th. In closing, let me offer recommendations that are not in my prepared testimony. As a member of the Region 1 committee that oversaw these, I'd ask you to remember that I would go with the strategy that you sought to fulfill in the first legislation. I'd remind you, however, that not all projects are equal. Imagine the strategic outcomes that seek to be fulfilled. Encourage ODOT to work diligently with the applicants so that the communication of those proposals are offered in common language so that each of the proposals is able to be evaluated in a comparable way. Often applicants, in their best intentions, do not offer the language in ways that can be evaluated comparably. Once the proposals are invested in, as they were this past summer by decision-making, and now are being invested in, please encourage part of the process to include celebration. Citizens of Oregon who helped to provide these dollars need to know the results of this investment. Celebrate those investments often. Let the public know. Taking a sports metaphor, it is the Super Bowl week. When you're considering Connect Oregon or Connect Oregon 2, don't stop there. Go deep and go often. Imagine that you have to do this over and over and over again. And $100 million, frankly, is not sufficient. I would ask you to remember one other thing. patience, but not too much patience. The decisions made by the regional acts and recommended to the statewide steering committee were made in late summer and adopted in the fall. We're just fresh into this process. I think we need to give the process some amount of patience, but as I said, not too much patience. And again, don't do this once. Don't do it twice. Go deep. Go often. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank
you. Thank you so much for your presentation, Mr. Clark. And I seem to underline over and over again, and best strategically, and I appreciate that you're suggesting that we do that. And you also mentioned the cost of congestion to the economy of the Portland region. Could you make sure that all of us have a copy of that?
We will do that, Representative.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
No other questions? Thank you.
Thank you again very much.
Thank you. Thank you. And this is all the names I had. I don't know if there was anybody else out there that wanted to talk. Okay.
Before you close the meeting?
Yes.
Since what we're talking about is lottery funds, right, that's funding
yes.
this,
correct.
I would love it. I don't know if ODOT can provide this. Maybe it's more appropriate for Ways and Means. But it would be very interesting for me to see where the lottery funds come from geographically. And I don't know if that's feasible. But if it is, I would like to see that. You know, a map showing where the lottery money comes from.
Okay.
You want to see my wallet? Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I've understood that possibly you'd be willing to consider the possibility of a work group on this bill because it appears that there are some amendments. We've had some amendments alluded to and offered. And so I just noted down some items here. As we communicate to each of the various segments of the industry what the legislative expectations might include in that regard, mm-hmm. and it appears that there's the some discussion of the distribution formula as well as the process expectations, and I appreciate the searching questions that Representative Tomei brought out relative to the expectations of the industry relative to the process. And I think that process and the process we need to establish both a rating and judging of the multimodal projects as well as the establishment of ascertainable standards and performance measurements. I think that certainly is the direction that we've kind of elicited here in the testimony. Now, as I've listed down, as I've listened to the various folks here today, it appears that there's at least 9 different groups, and maybe certainly more than that. I see other folks out in the audience there that I have listed down that might be included as the folks that should come together. Unless you think that a large group should mean that we take a long, long time to do this, I'd ask our chair in revenue today in appointing work groups that they be expected to get back to us in a week of some of their expectations and where they really expect to take a piece of legislation, and that they be back to us in 2 weeks with the final draft of the work group's amendments. So I just have listed down some of the folks that I see here in the audience. As I look around, I see folks from ODOT and Doug Tindall's back there too, if Matt doesn't want to do it, but he's got a lot of good workers here anyway. And Ann Hannes was certainly from OECD was here up in front. I saw Doug Riggs earlier. And Doug represents folks out in Central Oregon, and we heard good projects in Central Oregon, and then the map showed the other kinds of activities that probably need to line in Central Oregon. I saw some folks from Southern Oregon here, and Ken Messerly was here earlier. We just heard from Steve Clark, but I know that there are folks in the Portland area that are specifically related to the port. And I think I saw Annette Price here earlier. Yeah, there she is. Annette Price is still here. Ken Armstrong was in earlier. We heard several folks from ports and the good work that had been done on the ports. And I appreciated the comments that were made from the folks over on the Columbia Ports area there as well. But those folks from the ports ought to be involved. I understand there's a couple of different rail classes, the rail users and then the rail class one. I saw Paul Phillips here earlier from the rail class one folks. And then we had an actual testimony offered from Roger Martin, who represents the Transit Association, I understand. So, and then O-Rule, the Oregon Rural, or the Oregon Rail Users League, was, and I believe, Lana Butterfield is still here. Those folks probably deserve to be at the table. So, Madam Chair, I would just recommend that in the process that you might have line up a work group to recommend some kind of action on this bill, including the consensus on some amendments, and also involving the actual process as well as the distribution formula as well. So that would be my recommendation. Lest you think that I was just sitting here playing with my email and buying things on eBay during this time.
He was taking very good notes here. I also think that maybe one of the areas that we've forgotten is kind of the trucking area. So maybe someone from there.
Yes, Bob Russell is in the back there too. So absolutely.
And if you can think of how about AGC? Are they interested at all?
We'll build anything you like it.
Okay, well, if we've skipped somebody or if you can think of anything, please contact Judith. And I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2278. And I will get, if you all, everybody who's mentioned, whoever wants to participate, I'll get in touch with Judith. We'll set up a time to sit down and get started. So, and before I let the committee go, I have a proposal for you. Before I go check it out, it's been suggested maybe that instead of meeting on Fridays, since there's no one in this room after us, that we may go longer on Mondays and Wednesdays. You know, at the most an hour longer, and that would probably be as we get busier. I'm not sure at this point that, you know, we're going to be staying late. But so if people are okay with that, I will give the okay.
Great.
Okay. And I adjourn the committee.
Thank you.